to Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. In all of our programs, our intention is to bring to our listeners the best of people, places, and projects of Northern California that we think you're going to enjoy and that we think are exceptional. Today, I'm excited because I have an individual in here that I have not had the opportunity in a very long time to do an interview with. So I want to introduce to you my friend, Jake Mangus. He's the president and chief philanthropy officer of Mercy Foundation North. Welcome, Jake.
Thank you so much for having me, Lynn. It's great to see you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here. And I think it's important for our listeners to get to know Mercy Foundation North. I know sometimes when I talk to people about the hospital, say it's Mercy in Reading, they will say, well, don't you have to be Catholic to go there? And I say, no. They serve all people.
That's right. It reminds me of the decade that I spent at Northern Valley Catholic Social Service. We used to talk about it being, it's about the need, not the creed.
Yes.
And that was kind of a fun motto for us. Just having the spirit of the mission rooted in, you know, a Christian gospel message, let's say, but it's not about preaching the gospel. It's about living it out.
Yeah.
And I think that's serving. A really important thing in serving people.
Yeah.
And recognizing the dignity of others, the humanity that we all share. And so at Mercy Foundation North, that's also the case. We have this beautiful blend of the Sisters of Mercy of the Americas that started our organization. And we're asked, actually, this is what, to me, it's kind of remarkable thinking, early mid 20th century, people in Shasta County reached out to the sisters and said, will you come and run our hospital? And so their spirit for service transcends denominations, and it's something that's really important to me. In fact, I have goosebumps right now just talking about it, because they are not replacing themselves as a vocation, and they understand that. And there's been this grand commissioning of laity to carry forward the spirit of the sisters in the work that we do. And so for us, we still have three Sisters of Mercy out of the five corporate members.
Wow.
Of our organization. So they have the board majority to this day. And
that's amazing.
I think that's important for people to know. And so we bring the healing presence of God to the people that we serve. And outside of our foundation, of course, that's in our hospitals in Reading, at Mercy Reading, or at Mercy Mount Shasta, or at St. Elizabeth Community Hospital in Red Bluff, and also at Dignity Health Connected Living,
yeah,
which is a whole slew of services that we can probably talk about,
yeah,
in the coming moments.
And I want to clarify, too, that never in any of those programs are you there proselytizing.
Oh, no, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, you are just,
yeah,
the consciousness of your spiritual faith in action, like you pointed to.
That's correct. I think that recognizing that everyone has dignity and that we have a special place for the vulnerable, an emphasis on the vulnerable, and a focus on social justice as well.
Yes. So I think having that compassion, I like the thought of we all have spirit in common. You might mm-hmm. say common spirit. And so I think it's recognizing the beauty of every individual, no matter where they are in life, and to serve mm-hmm. the needs of those in need.
Yeah. And as I as a community member before I began in this role at Mercy Foundation North, which it's been 2.5 years now in this role, the name on the building might change. It went from what in just more recent times, Catholic Healthcare West became Dignity Health. And then in the coming years, we'll see that change to Common Spirit Health.
Yeah.
But I think for people in the community, they still know it as it's Mercy Hospital. It's
yeah.
Mercy Medical Center. And for us, we're Mercy Foundation North as a consistent name through it all. And why is that important? I think it's important for our donors and our community because they trust us. They know that we've proven over the years that we'll see projects to fruition, and the name might change on the building, but Mercy Foundation North will remain the same.
So, yes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people to recognize Mercy Foundation North is not the hospital.
That's correct.
You're what type?
We are a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, and we are fully funded by the hospital through an operating grant. And one of the things that I've never been able to say in other nonprofits that I've represented is that 100% of a donation, every penny of that dollar goes to the project designated by the donor, because all of our expenses are already covered. So I think that's a really nice thing for people to know too. They always ask, well, how much of this dollar is actually going to go to buy that piece of equipment? And we can say, all of it.
Yeah, yeah. Which, you know, part of the reason I do these programs is not only to educate and inform the community, but also to invite the community to engage in ways that they find they have a passion for, an interest in. And so any 501c3 nonprofit organization can accept donations. So hearing the program, they may decide, I want to do a donation to Mercy Foundation North because it benefits the community.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we try to make that easy. We're still a very personal organization. So we do enjoy having face-to-face visits with people to find out more about what they are interested in. And I've actually called us like the joy department of healthcare. I mean, you think labor and delivery, welcoming new babies into the world, that's pretty joyful.
Yes.
But so is the opportunity to connect people who have a passion for a certain part of the work that we do or the ministry that we represent, connecting them with that need so that they're able to feel that sense of joy that comes from selfless giving. And I really think that that altruistic donor, that's it's probably the most enjoyable time that we have, as being able to facilitate that. Rarely is it, well, geez, we're going to see if we can try to get them to donate to this project. It's more, we want to find out what is important to Lynn. And then once we know, then we match it with some need that we have. So it makes it a lot easier that way.
Yes. Plus, I think you're also getting to know the person. Mm-hmm. So it's about building relationship.
That's
as
true.
Well as fundraising. You know, yeah. I think those two are intertwined when you're working in the field of philanthropy.
Yeah, we don't want it to be a transaction. We really want people to have that relationship that's built on trust, for sure, and that we're going to do what we say we're going to do. When projects are completed and we can see the building or the piece of equipment that's been brought to a department, that's really that proof that we've been able to do it. And it means a lot to us. So we also provide the, you know, online giving at supportmercynorth.org. They can find us on social media as well and on all of those things, and give us a call and all of that. But whatever it might be, we're always happy to visit with people who are interested in helping healthcare.
And helping others. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I also do in my programs, especially at the very beginning, I like the guests to talk about where they grew up, where their education is, you know, where they were at with that, and what brought them to Reading. So how about painting that picture for us?
Well, okay. So
where'd you grow up, Jake?
You invited a storyteller on today, because my mind goes directly to Moonlight Graham, which is that character from Field of Dreams, who's the doctor in a little town called Chisholm, Minnesota. And, you know, Kevin Costner's character invites him to come back in some mystical way, play baseball again as a child and as a young man. And he says, you know, I'll never leave Chisholm. Once a place touches you like this, the wind never blows so cold again. And I was thinking about that regarding the North State, because I really think that I belong to the North State in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because I was born in Chico, actually, in Lowe Medical Center. And my parents moved up to Reading really soon after that, as my dad pursued his passion for sports broadcasting. And my mom's been a teacher my whole life as well. So I grew up in Reading and then went to high school in Red Bluff at Mercy High School. Came back to Reading to go to, well, I was living in Reading the whole time, but went to Shasta College, Butte College, and Chico State.
There you go.
Met my wife Janet at Chico State at the Newman Center, and then we got married. Actually, it was July 24th was our 22nd wedding anniversary, and we've raised our kids here in Reading. So you can just kind of get a sense for that little map for us and the area of service of an NVCSS or Northern Valley Catholic Social Service or the Reading Chamber of Commerce during that time that I was in that role and now at Mercy Foundation North really focused on making the North State community stronger. And that's appealed to me over the years. I have to have a mission under the work that I believe in.
So working in the nonprofit philanthropic area, but also focusing on healthcare, which is a regional. I mean, our area, the hospitals in this area serve the entire region. People come here because of the rural areas not having access to the same level of service that you have with the three major hospitals.
That's right. I mean, it's like we see Reading swell during the day for shopping. It also swells because of the services that we have here. And this is the big city in the North State, right? It is a hub. Rural health is in the news a lot these days.
Yes.
How do we create better access for people that live far away from cities and what technology exists? And it's just money that is the barrier. How can we bring that closer to home so that people will seek the care they need and not have the barrier of the cost of travel be there? And then also recruiting and retaining physicians is a very competitive world across the country. And that's no different here. I hear Todd Smith, our president of Mercy Reading, say that for every one, let's see, how's it go? For every opening, I'm trying to think. Oh, this is how it goes. For every oncologist, there are 9 openings.
Wow.
So our recruiters at the hospital do a great job in investing time and resources into recruitment, not just for Mercy and the Dignity hospitals, but for the market. We want to bring the physician to the community wherever they land, as long as they remain here. That's a win.
Yes, yes. And there's something special about 2026 for Mercy Foundation North, isn't there?
There really is. Wow, you are so on top of these things.
Huh?
Yeah, very perceptive. Something was happening in 1986 where a lot of organizations in our community were founded, and Mercy Foundation North is one of those. So we're celebrating 40 years of impact.
Wow.
And over that time, it's been sort of almost a J curve in terms of dollars raised. And I think that goes with the evolution of an organization. But we have raised, and to put it more accurately, the community has contributed more than $100 million.
That's amazing.
Yeah, through Mercy Foundation North to support healthcare in the North State. I've heard this part of the state be described as fiercely independent. Well, that's one way of saying it. But I also would say that we know that if it is to be, it's up to we. And we come together around projects when we need it. And we just celebrated, or not celebrated, but at least recognized the anniversary of the car fire. And I remember how the Reading community really coalesced around that. And whether it's a disaster, and hopefully there won't be any more of those anytime soon, but or an important project like the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, the community steps up even beyond our expectations.
Yes, it's amazing, isn't it? And it was fascinating to me. I helped coordinate a vigil for the car fire when all that was going, the evacuation, the recovery, the initial time frame. And I can remember Billy Graham Ministry Chaplaincy, Foursquare Chaplaincy, and other members of the groups coming to that vigil and saying, "We have never seen a community," and they travel all over the world, and they said, "We'd never seen a community come together like Reading has. We're impressed. We're moved by that connection that we see unfolding," which I thought was amazing to hear.
It gives hope for the future of, I think, philanthropy itself.
Yes.
Because there are so many organizations like ours that have worthy causes looking for help. And what is it? Is it a generational thing? Is it person to person? Probably a little bit of both in terms of that sense of responsibility to contribute to the community in that way. So it is something that does keep us up at night, and that's how do we sustain this level of philanthropy going forward? And the answer, we think, is telling compelling stories, inviting people to participate and to see that impact up close.
Yes.
And when they know that their dollars are staying here, that is a big piece of it. Not everyone wants to support local causes. Some people have a real heart for international efforts, but this is one where you give to Mercy Foundation North to buy that piece of equipment that's going to be in your hospital's, you know, I'd say cardiac program, yeah, for example, you know?
Yeah.
And you can know that it's going to be directed and done.
And I also think it's important for people to recognize that philanthropy is even more than giving monetarily. Some
sure.
people aren't in a position to be able to give monetarily, but they can sometimes mm-hmm. give some of their time. Mm-hmm. And ideally, we love to see that service happen in roles in nonprofit organizations, but it can also happen neighbor to neighbor or family member to family member. And there's what, you know, anytime we're in the process of giving mm-hmm. and creating service to others, that's philanthropy in action.
Yeah. You break down the word and you think it's like love for humanity,
yes.
love for people. And sure, you can help at the hospitals as a volunteer. We have our Mercy Guild and our auxiliaries and things like that, where you can connect with us to be considered for those efforts as volunteers. We also have at Dignity Health Connected Living opportunities to volunteer at the food bank through Meals on Wheels, which is one of our programs, or one of the other various programs that mostly help seniors at Connected Living to stay healthy and independent and out of the hospital. So those are ways that people can make a difference for us. To me, beyond the donation and those types of things, we see ourselves as stewards. I think in life, do we really ever own something? I mean, even if you paid off your mortgage, do you really own your house? You know, and
yeah.
for how long? I mean, it's
yeah.
going to be either it's going to be passed on to your heirs or beneficiaries, your kids. So to me, I think about how we are in this role for a finite period of time. And the idea is that we do the best we can to be stewards of what has been given and entrusted to us. So when our time has passed, it's better than it was when we found it.
Yes.
I think to me, that's a big key for us, for
yeah.
us and what we do.
And that is stewardship.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do a station ID. When we come back, I'm going to ask you to talk about that extraordinary Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, which I think is exciting to find out all the details about. So if you've just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with Jake Mangus, who is the president and the chief philanthropy officer of Mercy Foundation North, CPO, right? CPO?
That's right, yeah. Not C3PO, but CPO.
I love that. So I'm excited to hear about the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center. Tell us, spill the beans.
In all of our time at the foundation, this is probably the largest fundraising effort that we've ever undertaken. And to be completely, I think, equitable and fair about this, I want to give a shout out to my predecessor, Maggie Redman, because she
lots of work.
Yeah, I'm sort of enjoying that juicy peach of the tree that she planted many years before my arrival. Okay,
I love
so
that.
We can say it that way. But Maggie's a dear friend of mine, and it's really cool to be in this role following her impact here. And so when I think about the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, it reminds me of my time as president of the Reading Chamber of Commerce, because I arrived in January of 2016 in that role. And the first meeting that I held was about this project that Mercy Medical Center was going to undertake along the river. And they were talking about this wellness campus. So I got the meeting of our board together at the time for Mark Korth, who was the president leading the charge at that moment, to encourage the community to learn about the facts of this project and to get excited about the potential community impact and economic impact of it.
Yes.
See, fast forward to today and we're like, what, 10 years later?
Yeah.
And people have said, wow, that project by the river, by the Cypress Bridge there behind the old Raley's shopping center, if we still say it that way, it's really gone up fast. And then I go, yeah, it took 10 years to go really fast.
Yes.
But they ended up determining that the community health needs assessment said that oncology is really what we need right now in this community and going forward. So it's an $80 million project roughly. When our foundation was asked to raise $6.5 million to help with it, there was a big gulp from the board, according to campaign chair and outgoing board chair, Dr. Dave Civilier. And we went and pursued it. So when Sierra Pacific Foundation and the Emerson family said yes to being a $3 million donor.
Wow.
We were off and running. That was that lead gift that said, we can do this. So remember, 6.5 was the original goal. Well, today I can tell you that this community has contributed $11.5 million to this project.
Wow.
Yes.
That's impressive.
And what has been beautiful about that is it's allowed us to make it more than a building. It's ensured that we have the latest technology in terms of cancer treatment and detection in the building, but also we have the John and Betty Fitzpatrick Path of Healing. That's a garden next to the building itself with trees and bushes and 6 water features, and there'll be a shade structure there in the future. So people that are visiting their loved ones or people who are receiving treatment have a place that they can rest outside. Upstairs at the cancer center, there is a second story balcony under the canopy of cottonwood trees by the river. That restorative space would not have been there without philanthropy. So I think about that with a lot of gratitude.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to invite all of the listeners to the grand opening on August 18th at 10 a.m., right there at the location on Hartnell next to America's Tire is another way of saying it.
Yes.
The specific address I can get to you. This is going to be a community celebration, and we'll have guided tours throughout the day that concludes, I think, 3 o'clock is the last tour. So people will have a chance to come see it. It's come one, come all. This is a community win.
Yay, yay. And they don't have to show up RSVP. They can just show up.
They can just show up.
That's perfect.
Correct. Yep. We should have a lot of local media with us that day. And there will be a formal presentation and then a lot of informal time too.
And I like the idea of the tours.
Yes.
So that's August 18th at 10 a.m.
That is correct.
Show up. Take a tour. See, it's ground, you know, celebrating the installation of Sierra Pacific Cancer Regional Cancer Center.
Yeah, and I'll break the news right here that another thing that's exciting for us is we got together with Sierra Pacific again, and we said, we have a building next to St. Elizabeth Community Hospital in Red Bluff that is our oncology and infusion center. What if we made the branding consistent and we called it the Sierra Pacific Oncology and Infusion Center at St. Elizabeth Community Hospital? And they said, yes. So that will happen in the spring of 2027 when we do that new name unveiling community-wide. But we're excited about that because it really speaks to what we're trying to accomplish, and that's to bring cancer care closer to home. And
So
the people in Tehama County will have that as an option and a reminder of that option.
Yes. And I know some people from Shasta County go down there for that process as well.
That makes sense to me.
Yes, absolutely.
Of the 3 hospitals, you have 3 examples of different types of hospitals in a way. We've got this level 2 trauma center in Mercy Redding that is this hub place that catches a lot of the North State for certain levels of care. And then you have a rural hospital that's much smaller. I think it's 50 beds or so at St. Elizabeth Community Hospital. They also have labor and delivery. I know my sisters had babies there. And then
they used to have the water delivery. I don't know if they still do.
They have water. I just asked this question, so it's good. For labor, yes, but delivery, no.
Oh, okay.
But that is still an option there. And then there's a critical access hospital, by definition, in Mount Shasta, Mercy Mount Shasta. So each one has a different feel when you go to them. And the consistency is just that dedicated mission-focused staff where you just really feel that they have accepted the core values of the organization. So
that's significant and important. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, I know some people in the community have said, well, are they going to be able to get enough doctors to staff that and all the support staff to what the doctors are doing? What do you think about that? What do you know about that?
What I know about it, because I read it in the newspaper this morning, is Todd, our president of the hospital, he said that we have 4 oncologists currently and that we want 7. So we're continuing to recruit for those positions. And, you know, INLO, I just had a chance to visit their regional cancer center, which is coming online about the same time as ours.
Ah.
And some might say, well, are you worried about that? Is that competition? Well, unfortunately, the need is so great that it is not competition.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually going to be the opposite, not only for recruitment. When you're trying to get a doc from out of town to come check out the North State, they could visit 2 sites on the trip instead of 1. And we have a relationship with INLO where we have cancer doctors there that are actually in partnership with us that will come to Reading and see patients. So it's really refreshing to me to hear that perspective. So,
yes, yes. Yeah. And when you think of the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, is there a date when they're going to open to treat patients?
Yeah, there. It is dependent upon the regulatory agencies coming in and approving us to, saying, yep, okay, you can see patients. So
yes,
that is a big hurdle that we have to climb over. However, the goal is to see patients in September.
That'd be great.
So that is right upon us. And what will happen is we'll be consolidating, I think it's 4 separate sites under 1 roof.
Wow.
And that makes it easier, we intend, of course, for the patient so that they know if it's cancer care, I'm going to that one place. I don't need to do the hopscotch around town to different sites. It's already a difficult journey for a lot of people. One of the things that will happen as a result, though, is they'll be vacating our cancer center at the hospital. So that space will become available, and we are working toward bringing additional patient beds there.
Ah.
So anyone who spent time at the hospital recently knows that we are very full oftentimes.
Yes.
Not just in inpatient beds, those that have been admitted, but also in our emergency department.
Yes.
So the intent is to free up bed space so that the wait times are better at our emergency department as well. So that's something that I think will happen as a result of the cancer center. It continues to have a positive impact.
Yes. And I do think, like you said, having Chico and Reading will bring more docs to come look at the possibility of relocating here.
Yep.
And hopefully the people that come in, the oncologists that come in, are people that enjoy our scenic North State.
You nailed it. When I talked to our recruiters about this, I said, do we just like cast a wide net and whoever we bring in, we talk to? And they said, no. We actually target people based upon their telling us that they want what we've got here, the great outdoors and the adventures and the trails and all of that stuff. So one example of a local physician would be Dr. Min Kwan Vu. She is through our Stanford Heart Program. She's a cardiothoracic surgeon, and she loves the outdoors. She's out on a trail running all the time. I follow her on Facebook now, and I saw that she joined North State CrossFit. You know, so
there you go.
You're getting the person that if they're looking for the metropolitan experience. Well, we always tell them, you know, we're only a few hours from the Bay Area or whatever, but sometimes we just know that it's not going to be the right fit. So rather than spending all of the time and effort to court someone, let's focus on people that already have told us they're interested
in
more of a rural setting.
I think that's wise. And, you know, you want people that are going to be happy here that really like it.
And another one, this is an oncologist, and this was one of my favorite recruitment stories. I get invited to these meetings, and I go representing the foundation and our donors, telling them, you are wanted, please come. Well, this oncologist is Dr. Brad Sackfield, and he said to us at our visit, he said, well, I got to tell you that when I was younger, and he's probably still in his 30s, I'd guess, I was a rodeo cowboy in Canada.
Wow.
So, of course, you know, we're around the table going, oh, this is perfect. So we're not allowed to sweeten the pot for, our recruits. That's illegal. But what we can do is we can invite our community to send a care package. So the Rodeo Association in Reading and the Red Bluff Roundup folks each sent care packages to Dr. Sackfield saying, come on out. Yeah. We're ready for you.
Howdy, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Howdy.
That's great.
I'm thinking he might be one of one, you know? Is there another oncologist who is also a former bull rider? I don't know. I don't know. Show me that and I'll fall over, I guess.
I think that's a small pool.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a station ID. And one of the things I want to ask you about is for the public that may not be aware of kind of the processes that are involved. As the regional oncology center functions, will people be able to walk in the door and get an appointment, or is it a referral process?
Okay.
So if you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I also want to pause and thank Shasta County Arts Council under the direction of Nancy Hill, the executive director. She and her team do extraordinary things to promote and support the arts in Shasta County, but they also support KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, providing us with space for our Reading studio where the majority of our local productions transpire. So without them, the Reading people would have to travel to be able to produce something. So we want to give thanks to them. I'm here in conversation with Jake Mangus, who's the president and chief philanthropy officer of Mercy Foundation North. And one of the things we're talking about is the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center that's coming online. He mentioned that there's going to be the ribbon cutting dedication August 18th at 10 a.m.
That's correct.
And throughout from 10 a.m. to about 3 p.m., there's going to be tours. So maybe you can't get there at 10 a.m., but getting a tour later in the day, I encourage you to stop by. So when you have a regional cancer center like this, can people walk in the front door or do they need referrals from other places?
We would always encourage people to walk through the front door. And if they're seeking information, they can get it in person just as easy as if they called. These are things that, you know, it's out of my lane, but I can say that, yes, you're referred, but you also have choice in this community too. Thankfully, we have other oncology providers in town too, which is wonderful. There is something new at this regional cancer center, at the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center. We have a public-facing pharmacy. So anyone in the community can walk in the door and get a prescription filled. You don't have to be a patient of the cancer center for that to be the case. So just like there's, you know, CVS Pharmacy, we will have a pharmacy as well that's open to the public.
Wow.
So that'll be a nice thing too.
So you can have your medical provider email, fax it over to that pharmacy and then get the script picked up and out the door you go.
Definitely. That's it.
Wow. Another option. It's always good to have options.
Yeah.
So anything else we need to know about the Regional Cancer Center? I think there along the river is going to be beautiful, and being in the patios in the shade of the cottonwood trees is kind of nice, isn't it?
It really is. That's been part of our story, right? It'll be a nice place to be, except for maybe this time of the year when it's really warm outside, but thankfully it's in the shade, like you mentioned. So it is a very nice space. We have increased the number of infusion chairs or beds from 12 to 31.
Wow.
So that's a capacity increase that's really great. And I asked Jennifer Reynolds, who heads up our oncology program, I said, have we built this with the idea that it's going to be sort of future-proof to an extent? And she said, absolutely. We will not. It's not going to be a case of we're open and we're full at capacity. We have room to grow. So I think that's encouraging as well for the North State to know that it was built with the future in mind.
Yes, and with a regional center, because we're positioned in Northern California, we're 3 hours plus to the Bay Area, 3 hours to Sacramento. And I know that the hospital here has relationship, like you mentioned, working with Stanford over the heart program.
Correct.
So I'm sure the oncology center will be in relationship. I mean, all medical people are.
They are. And again, just sort of puppeting what I heard from Dr. Civilier during the campaign trail, let's say, he said, once you've, you know, you could go to some of the world-renowned cancer care centers in the United States. Once the protocol is set, then you can have that protocol followed anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so to know that they're going to follow that here in Reading, it's not going to be any different than if you were at, I don't know, just name it Sloan Kettering or something, some big center outside of the community. So I think that's kind of a nice reminder as well, that you can go, you know, see an oncologist out of the area, but you can fulfill that protocol in the community at our center too. So,
and that's a standard of practice mm-hmm. wherever you go.
Yeah.
That way you don't have to travel to that same location. You mm-hmm. can be here local.
I wondered what a tumor board is. And I said, so is it what it sounds like? Do they get together and talk about tumors? And it's true. So a number of times a week, our oncology team at the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, they will get together in the boardroom there, and they will have cases lined up that one doc will want to, you know, present on, and then get insight from the team about the strategy for care for that person. And that's the esprit de corps that we hear about, that having all of them in one location will benefit the patient. So,
yes.
Yeah.
'Cause we know two minds are better than one.
And yes. We know, and I'm hearing this, so what about AI, you know, and in my head right now.
Yes.
And that's a thing. So we're seeing artificial intelligence in healthcare show up, and it's being implemented by our hospital, actually, at the St. Elizabeth Community Hospital, related to reading scans. And we have this AI mammography program where... I think it's as simple as they'll take a scan and they'll do the mammogram, and an anomaly will show up. And because AI has this database of similar looking anomalies, they can rate the chance of it being cancerous. And they will pinpoint to the radiologist, you should look at this. And so knowing that that is technology that's here in the North State, I think brings some additional confidence as well, that
yes.
we're doing our best to stay on that leading edge.
Yes. And, you know, I know there's lots of thoughts about the capacity of AI, the good and the bad. But, you know, it's like anything else. You can focus the good for good.
Yeah.
And you can filter out the bad. And mm-hmm. so you don't, for me, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
I want to make the tools work in a way that benefits what I'm doing.
Sure.
So in the medical field, that can be a huge asset.
Absolutely, it can. It just helps us to, gosh, you see the way that technology advances, and it just seems like it's going at a faster rate all the time. And in this case, if it gets us closer to a cure for whatever disease you might want to name, then that's a good thing. It has to be, right?
It's a very good mm-hmm. thing. And you know, if something comes up you think about that we haven't covered with the Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Center, let me know and we can talk about that.
Okay.
But also thinking about the 40 years that you
yes.
are, that's a huge landmark.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the resource tools I think that you have that people can access is the Impact Year in Review magazine.
Yeah, this is produced every year, and we are really proud of this, and it really shows some of the highlights of 1 year's worth of impact from what our donors have supported through Mercy Foundation North. It's available in physical form at our office. However, because it's our 40th, and we are going to be sending out the new one in a couple of months, we'll have a lot more copies on hand, and we will also be mailing out a lot of them. It also resides electronically at supportmercynorth.org, so people can get it there. But it does spell out, from programs to pieces of equipment and major projects, what it is our donors have decided to support.
Yeah. I think one of the things that historically I've been really impressed with is the Connected Living Food Bank. It makes such a difference in people's lives. And if people want to get more information about that, what do you think is the best way?
I think the best thing to do is to call Connected Living. I know that they've got a new website, and so it's in the process of being built. I just love hearing the stories of more than 5 million pounds of food being distributed last year alone
wow.
through that food bank. We have one food bank, and many food pantries in this community. And it's really interesting for me to have learned that that food bank, that Shasta County designated food bank, is under the umbrella of Dignity Health Connected Living. You do not have to qualify to receive food assistance. So when I go out to the Mercy Oaks campus there next to Simpson University, you see a line of cars that can extend down College View all the way to Fire Station, is it number 8 or whatever it is, on Churn Creek Road?
Yes.
Which shows you that we are serving our friends and our neighbors and the people who are just trying to make that bridge to their next paycheck, however that comes in. There's also an emergency food counter there. Since we went through a $2 million expansion of the food bank recently, partially supported by the foundation and our donors, that emergency food counter, you can just go in and ask for the box of food, and it's staples like meat and cheese and eggs and milk and rice and beans, and it's designed to get you through a couple of days. So I am impressed, and you can see that that's true healthcare. I mean, by the time people come to our hospitals, we're really treating an illness oftentimes, right?
Yes.
But to keep people healthy, you want to make sure that they have the things that they need, like nutrition is a huge part of it. Social connection. So having the lunches that we have every day during the week, where they're called congregate meals and they're by donation only. So you could pay $3 and get that meal, or you can pay $1 or nothing.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it is seniors coming together and communicating with each other. And we know how that impacts health. So there's that. We also have the Parkinson's support group now at Connected Living. And then you start to get into the acronyms. So I'll say enhanced care management, ECM is what they call it. And all of these programs that transportation, we are the paratransit authority in partnership with the Reading Area Bus Authority.
Isn't that awesome?
For the greater Reading area.
Yeah.
Every time you see one of those shorter buses driving around town that say Shasta Connect on the side of them, that is Connected Living.
Yeah.
So great impact there. We'll be hitting the adopt a senior time of the year during the holidays with like adopt a family at NVCSS and all these others.
Yes.
It's a beautiful place to go and learn more about how you can help. I did do a ride along with a member of the Reading East Rotary Club for our Meals on Wheels food distribution. And again, talk about friends and neighbors. I knew a couple of the people that we delivered food to. So much maligned homeless camps that are in canyon areas around town and so on. And we know each person out there has their own story for finding themselves in that circumstance. Those aren't the people that are receiving the food from the food bank by and large. They are people that are living in homes and maybe they're on the fixed income, or maybe somebody lost a job, or the fact that it's $5.50 a gallon for gas now and
yes,
your energy bill's going up and all the things that we rely on for life and are unavoidable expenses by and large, we're getting hit all over the place. So that's really increased our amount of food distributed by 800,000 pounds this
wow.
last
800,000 pounds.
We have a partnership with Feeding America. So the Contra Costa Food Bank feeds our food bank. You know, we see these semi trucks show up. So Feeding America, Meals on Wheels, Parkinson support, all of that's under Connected Living.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's quite the place.
Phenomenal. And you know, sometimes I hear people as a psychotherapist, and not only clients that I have, but friends that I have, and they'll have an elder. And that elder can be, you know, depending on their health condition, they can be 55 years old and struggling with health, or they can be 75 years old and they're isolated.
Mm-hmm.
It's great that they can be at home if that's possible, but going out to a meal, a congregate meal
yes.
in community, they build relationships, they're socializing, mm-hmm. they're getting nutritious food. So I think I always tell mm-hmm. people about the program.
I appreciate that a lot. I have to tell a story if I have time to do
yeah.
it. Haley Kennedy is one of our employees. She's a manager of philanthropy with us. And one of her areas of focus is Connected Living. She received a response to a direct mailer where on the remittance envelope, it was a little note, and I'll call the man John. So John called and said, or wrote this note, sorry, it said that he is wanting to get on the Meals on Wheels list to get food delivered to him. You see, I'm turning 100 years old next week, and my wife of 65 years passed away 15 years ago, and it takes a lot for me to get out of the house these days. So she ended up connecting with him, and we decided that it would be appropriate to bring him a little birthday gift, but to ask him what he wanted for his birthday. And he said, well, let me think about that. And he called back the next day or later that day and said, you know, I really like beef. And so we got him. Haley delivered some beef to him. Aww. And in their discussion realized that he also was wanting to connect with our senior companion program, which is simply what it sounds. It's seniors connecting with other seniors, and usually one of the seniors is more mobile and steady than the other, so they're able to drive and connect with that person. So one little write-up to us, and that's, you know, the way that we respond to it. We responded with human kindness. We responded with the sister's spirit, and we were able to help this man to know that he's thought of and recognized, and he has dignity. You know, yeah. We care about him. Somebody does. So that's really right there, the heart of Mercy Foundation North, I would say.
Yeah. Powerful, powerful. I'm going to do another station ID. When I come back, I'm going to ask you about dealing with death and dying through the hospice program. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is a collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I also want to pause and thank Enjoy Magazine for all their support of this program. We're nearing 16 years of featuring Enjoy Exceptional Living. It's their dedication and commitment to community that supports this program. Also want to thank KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, providing local programs as well as national programs. But the local programs are produced by local volunteers. And we invite you, and we say, no donation is too small. You can go on the website, kkrn.org, and use the donate button through credit card, or you can mail a check. And all the address and information is on that website. I am here in conversation with Jake Mangus. He's the president and chief philanthropy officer for Mercy Foundation North. So one of the things I think Mercy's focus has been well known for is the hospice program. So the focus of hospice, how would you describe that was for someone that may not be familiar with that?
Well, the way I think about it is it's, again, making sure that everyone, when they reach the end of life, they're able to live the best they can for as long as they can. I mean, in addition to helping with the dying process and having someone be comfortable, it's also just making sure that that quality of life during that time of life that we all will face someday is as best as it can be. And regardless of people's ability to pay, that they're able to access those services.
Yes.
Where, you know, so I think I can say that one of the beautiful programs that we offer is called Light Up a Life. And these happen across the country, and ours has recently lit up again in recent years. And last year we had this beautiful candlelight memorial underneath the twinkling showery lights of gold at the Reading Garden of Lights.
Nice.
So it was a really nice setting. And the idea was whether or not someone was able to make a donation to our hospice program, they were invited. And we wanted people to have the chance to make a connection, however that looks for them, with yes. people that have gone before them that are important to them. And there's an open mic opportunity where folks line up with their battery-operated candles in hand, and they're able to say the name of their loved one or loved ones, and then place the candle on this implied Christmas tree. And so what you'll see is it starts off with one dimly lit candle, and then it gets a little brighter. And then after 150 people have done it, you've got a pretty bright tree. So that creates a lot of light of hope and those types of things. You may have, people in the community may have remembered the Christmas tree fantasy was something that Mercy Foundation North did for many years. We still have the Christmas trees themselves that people will sponsor. And then they'll designate the location that they want that tree to be placed. And they're, we have volunteer tree designers and things like that. So, you know, we have folks that year after year say, I am going to sponsor a tree and I want the tree to go to the lobby of the Haven Humane Society, or I want it to be in the lobby of St. Elizabeth Community Hospital or whatever it might be. So that's been a special tradition. We thought we should keep it going because it's light up a tree, light up a life for hospice.
Yes.
And our hospice team does such amazing work. We had this last year started for the first time a Hearts of Hope grief support group started that was specific to parents, the surviving parent of young children who lost their significant other for one reason or another. And the YMCA hosts these support groups. They're in person. They provide free childcare for the attendees. And one of our chaplains, Terry Morgan, leads that. It's again, not a faith based
or
support
based
group or fee based.
Yeah.
And we wanted to eliminate a lot of those perceived barriers so that people would come out and do that. And the person that funded it is someone who herself lost her husband and while she was pregnant with their daughter. And she said, this was something that I wish was in this community when I was going through that stage of grief. So she made it possible herself by saying, I'm going to make this happen. So we said,
awesome.
We will help you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I know from time to time they offer a different variety of groups so people can call Mercy Hospice and find out about the grief support group.
That's true. There are more than one.
And
that's great.
I think it's just an invaluable resource that's available to the community. You don't have to be on Mercy Hospice to access the support groups. Mm-hmm. And I like the whole thought about hospice is where people can have the privilege and I would say natural capacity to pass at home, or even if they're in assisted living, wherever they're living, the goal is to keep them in that environment instead of a hospital.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is absolutely it. You know, you want to be in a place that feels safe and comfortable. And oftentimes that is in the home. And I've been really impressed to see how that group operates to make people feel comfortable.
Yes. There's so many programs that you have. And what do you think is the best way if people want to look online? What's the best destination for them to go and seek? Like the Connected Living just seems like it goes on and on.
Yeah. I mean, you can go to Google and just Google Dignity Health Connected Living to find their website and their contact information. Also, when you go to supportmercynorth.org, you will see our current projects and links to what we support all the time at the three hospitals, plus Connected Living. And I think that's a really nice thing. We were talking about support teams. So
yes.
I have to say, I couldn't do this without Alyssa, Randy, Delcy, Shayna, Haley, Diane, and Jennifer. And I want to thank all of them for everything they do for me on a daily basis.
The staff of Mercy Foundation North.
Yes. Yes.
It isn't a one man does it all, is it?
Not at all.
Takes a team.
Yeah, absolutely. The term managing up, they do a really good job of that.
Oh, good. That's funny. I like that. And you've had some projects in the past. When you
yes.
think of the 40 years, mm-hmm. is there any of those you want to highlight that
yeah.
people new to the community may not be aware of, or it's nostalgic for others?
Sure. Well, looking in the retrospect, there are black and white photos of staff members who have like on a poster board a markered out thermometer that's overflowing, and it's saying, we raised more than $13,000 for this effort at St. Elizabeth Community Hospital. And so I think about that grassrootsy type of flavor in our early days. And now as we've grown up, we raised $10 million a year on average, it seems, over the last few years, and a lot of it's grants.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Which I think is important for people to know that you go after grants.
That's true. Alyssa Johnson is our chief grant writer, and she writes grants for our whole region that we support. And this last fiscal year that just ended at the end of June, more than $7 million in grants. So of the $10 million raised, you've got $7.5 million coming from grants. So the other $2.5 million is community support, more pure donations from people in the community. So I think that's a good perspective. So the small contributions, like I mentioned, from employee campaigns of the past, those still continue. But we also raised the money to help build the Mercy Oaks campus, which used to be Golden Umbrella and Shasta Senior Nutrition Program.
Yes.
And now it's Dignity Health Connected Living. So that's one. Until the Cancer Center project, that was our biggest back in 2000 was when that occurred. Our typical project is usually $1 to $2 million, and they ask the community to come up with about 10% of the total project cost. So they'll ask the foundation to help with that. So if it's a $2 million project, they're saying $200,000 would come from community support and the rest would be picked up by the organization itself. So currently, we have a surgical services upgrade project at St. E's in Red Bluff, and that will improve all of our operating rooms and bring a Da Vinci robotic surgical system to town. And that is big city technology right there in Red Bluff.
Nice.
And it will really help with minimally invasive surgery options. And we have the surgeon and Dr. Gonzalez there ready to use it. So that's coming, I think, in a year, because we've raised $1.1 million of the $1.25 million goal. So that's going to happen. That's really exciting. And we'll be celebrating with the community actually later this week. And then up in Mount Shasta, the project there is for the maternal child services campaign. And that's to upgrade the labor and delivery rooms themselves. The wallpaper that's on the wall today is the same wallpaper that was there many years ago. So moms are having babies that say, my baby picture had the same wallpaper in the background. So
it's time.
It's time. And an infant security system upgrade. I mean, we're on the I-5 corridor, so you can never be too safe about that. We don't have a problem with this, but, you know, just making sure that the latest and greatest security is installed.
Yeah,
there.
And you don't want to have a problem with it, no. So that's why you do that.
Yeah, that's why we call ourselves a high reliability organization.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We try to get it right 100% of the time.
Yes.
And then, so fetal heart monitors, those have been ordered, and then a new labor and delivery bariatric bed.
Wow.
It does a lot of cool things that helps with the labor process.
And unfortunately, we're running out of time. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I think is important to emphasize is that there may be a listener out there and they may think, well, my $5 isn't going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. What would you say?
I would say that's incorrect. It does make a difference. And it is why on our donor wall at the Cancer Center, if you made a $100 contribution or greater, you have your name on our community wall. So we didn't want it to just be the $1 million donor that's recognized. Yeah. But $5, we know that that would provide a meal for a senior, for example, at Connected Living through Meals on Wheels. So as an example of, you still have an impact, and it's all of us together that make this possible. So we thank all of our donors, past, present, and future.
Yes. And if they want to make a donation, can they do so through the website?
They can. Yeah. SupportMercyNorth.org. Really easy to do so. And if you have challenges with that or you want to talk to a live person, you can call us at the office at 247-3424.
In the 530.
In the 530 area code.
Your cell phone will even dial without 530. So I want to thank Jake Mangus. Mm-hmm. He's the president and chief philanthropy officer at Mercy Foundation North. A lot of information and a lot more for us to learn. We only really kind of the tip of the iceberg. So congratulations on Sierra Pacific Regional Cancer Foundation, all the extraordinary work you've been doing and continue to do. And I love the mission of giving, of serving.
Thank you so much, Lynn.
Yes.
It's a privilege.
I want to thank Jake, our listeners, and invite each of us to make this day and every day a day to enjoy exceptional living. Thank you for joining us.